All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are looking ahead to the 2019 offseason to assess some of this team's biggest needs on offense through the first seven games of the 2018 season.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years at FalcFans.com. You can find me on Twitter at FalcFans. And, of course, I'm the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today, we're going to do something that I typically try to pump the brakes on, which is look ahead to this upcoming offseason, taking a look at the Falcons' needs at each position groups. And considering what moves may be on the horizon come next March and April, looking at free agency and the draft. Given that we're practically halfway done with the 2018 season, we're in the midst coming off of a bye week, more accurately to say, I think it's a good opportunity to assess how far we've come and maybe where we might be going in the future. Today, as I said at the top, I'll be focusing on the offense. Tomorrow, we'll sort of flip the script and talk about some of the defensive needs and whatnot. Just as a heads up for what the rest of the week's schedule is planned to be, Wednesday, you will have a crossover episode with Locked On Redskins. I'll bring on two more guests on Thursday and Friday, where we'll talk a little bit more about the Falcons, maybe some other topics, as well as potentially looking ahead a little bit to the draft as well on Friday as well. So let's talk about the team needs through seven games so far this season. And I should emphasize that there is still plenty of 2018 left to be played. And none of the things that I say today are set in stone. I may feel strongly opinionated about certain things, but there is still nine more games left to be played. And it may be that what happens in those nine games could change some of those opinions, even the stronger ones that I have. And as I've said many times in the past, you know, nothing is set in stone. Certainly what I think could be the case today is not necessarily what I think is going to be the case a month from now, and certainly may not be the case and probably won't be the case 4.5 months from now when the offseason begins. So definitely keep that in mind, whether you agree with some of these opinions or not. None of these, you know, these are October opinions, not March opinions. And certainly October opinions carry far, far less weight than March/April opinions. So let's jump right in. Let's start with the quarterback position. Obviously, Matt Ryan is locked in, probably will play another 4 to 6 years, I'm assuming, at this point. And obviously, the Falcons do have some concerns at that backup quarterback position. You got Matt Schaub being a free agent. You got Kurt Benkert coming off of a mostly lackluster preseason and not necessarily filling that role. I think right now, you know, and I could sit here and spend a ton of time talking about what you want in sort of a backup quarterback. But I think right now the Falcons are more in a position where a veteran that could sort of be a sounding board for Matt Ryan is much more valuable to them, given that Matt Ryan presumably is going to play several more years, another half decade in Atlanta. And so drafting a guy at this point, just, I wouldn't say is a waste of a draft pick, but you're probably not going to be able to get the most out of that player until his second contract, which, you know, we're not in the process of drafting guys for their second contract, you know, 7-8 years down the road. So I think you can sort of wait on drafting a quarterback in the future. Part of the issue is, you know, obviously if a good player falls into day three, then that's something. But part of the issue is the fact that, you know, quarterbacks tend to be overdrafted rather than underdrafted. So the chances of a sleeper or a good player sliding in the draft is very low. And so you're not really going to be in a position, you know, late in the draft to sort of capitalize on targets. And so I think right now, probably the best strategy for the Falcons would probably to retain Matt Schaub for one more year and bring Benkert back and bring in another sort of undrafted rookie to be that fourth arm and push for time. I think he obviously, you know, I know that's not necessarily a popular decision with Schaub in the case of Schaub, But I think if you can keep him on a 1 year deal, that's like $2 or $2.5 million max, I think that's definitely worthwhile. Obviously you don't want to pay him as much as they paid him the last 2 years to basically, you know, sit the bench and single-handedly guide this team to the playoffs. No, I didn't say that. Bad joke. But I think if you can get him on a cheaper deal, I think it's worthwhile for you, especially given that this crop of free agent quarterbacks is not great. And the few guys that are obviously better than Schaub are going to be a lot more expensive. And then the handful of guys that, you know, I know some people would make an argument that someone like Trevor Siemian's better than Schaub. I don't really agree with that argument. Clearly, those people haven't watched Trevor Siemian play. But, like, you know, he's going to be significantly cheaper. And so, you know, I'd much rather have Schaub at $2 million than Trevor Siemian at $1 million, if you ask me personally. But I know that's not necessarily a popular opinion. But that's sort of my thought on the quarterback position. Let's move on, talk running backs. Obviously, the big decision is going to have to be with Tevin Coleman. At this point in time, I'm not going to make any declarative statements. Really, with Coleman and what the Falcons are going to do with that spot, I'll sort of let the next 9 weeks play out and see how he performs and how that affects his market, how much that affects whether the Falcons make him a priority resigning or not, or are willing to let him test the market. I think all of that will play out over the next, you know, 7 to 9 weeks, depending on whether Freeman comes back for those last two games of the season. I think right now, though, what I will say is if Coleman does walk, which at this point in time I think is a coin flip, the odds may be differently, but let's just say it's a coin flip at this point. I don't necessarily know if the Falcons need to feel compelled that they have to replace him. I think the trio of Devontae Freeman, Ito Smith, and Brian Hill going in, you can feel reasonably comfortable with those guys going into 2019. I know I'm probably higher on Brian Hill than others. I am higher on Devontae Freeman's ability to bounce back than a significant portion of Falcon fans. But I think unless like a really good running back slides into day three, I don't feel like you need to feel compelled to have to add another running back. I think unlike a lot of other positions on the roster, and we'll talk about one later, I don't think running back is a position where you have to feel like, oh, we have to get our guy now. Like even if you think 2019 is going to be Freeman's last year, which at this point in time seems a reasonable conclusion, and you're going to need a new RB1 heading into 2020, I don't feel like you have to be worried that, oh no, we're not going to be able to find that. We need to get that guy now, as opposed to you can just wait till 2020 and get that guy, because running backs have a relatively low learning curve. And it's typically not that hard to find quality running backs in the NFL. And even if you go into the season with that trio of Freeman, Ito, and Hill, and then you come out of training camp being like, oh, this is an area we need, finding decent options off the street, in undrafted free agency, on the waiver wire, etc., really isn't that hard to do. Running backs, you know, as they are commonly said to be a dime a dozen, and teams treat them that way. And so you can get good players, you know, Alex Collins, Mike Gillisley, Philip Lindsay. You don't really need to invest a lot of in your running back position to get value out of that group, which is, I think, a strategy the Falcons need to keep bear in mind before they go too crazy, whether it's to keep Coleman or to replace him. Moving on to the fullback position, obviously I think Ricky Ortiz has shown enough progress that you can certainly be confident going into 2019, reasonably confident going into 2019 that he could be the incumbent there. You bring in an undrafted rookie, push him. That's basically all you have to do at the fullback position, which is a nice situation to be in, which the Falcons haven't, you know. Yeah, obviously the Falcons haven't been in that situation recently due to various reasons. Long-time listeners of this Locked On Fullbacks podcast know exactly what I'm talking about. Before we move on, you know, because I have a lot to say about the wide receiver position and the offensive line position, so let's finish up by talking about the tight end group. I think, you know, the tight end group is pretty fine. So you don't necessarily feel a huge, huge need at that spot. I think Hooper's shown the growth, because I think part of the issue with Hooper going this season was if he didn't show growth or at least be competent starter this year, which he has so far through 7 games, then you would maybe feel compelled to try to bring in his replacement in this upcoming year's draft. I think Paulson has been a solid blocker this year for the most part. And so re-signing him as a free agent, I think, makes a lot of sense. Saubert really hasn't shown the growth that we wanted to see so far, to at least put him in the mix so far as a future second tight end. And rather, he looks more like he's going to be a more likely to be a long-term third tight end rather than the heir apparent to Paulson at that number two spot. So with that in mind, I do think there is an opportunity for the Falcons to draft more of that long-term number two tight end this year. And if they could do so in the middle rounds, that makes a lot of sense. From what I understand, this is a relatively deep tight end class, potentially, if several underclassmen enter the draft. And if that's the case, you can wait until the middle rounds and get a solid tight end that has a little bit more upside to be sort of that tag team partner with Hooper long term. And, pulling the trigger on that guy in round four or five or something like that makes a lot of sense in my eyes. So we got more to talk about with the Falcons wide receivers. But I do want to let you guys know that the NBA season is back. And, of course, the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered, where you can find a show devoted to all 30 NBA teams, including Locked On Hawks with host Brad Rowland, giving you that great NBA coverage. You get those podcasts wherever you get your Locked On podcasts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your NBA team every day. Now, if you listen to this podcast, you know I have a lot of answers, but I don't have the answers to everything, and that includes who's going to win each week. But if you guys out there have those answers, then you got to check out my bookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with, and that's why I always tell people to go to my bookie, because trust me, they're the best bet you'll make this season. They've been in business for years. They have great reviews online. Their mobile site, very easy to use. They have in-game live betting, over-under on fantasy points scored, and the most rewarding player perks in the business. MyBookie has recently been slammed with new bettors and wants to help you out by giving you a $25 free play if you deposit $100 or more after 7 p.m. Eastern. Use the promo code LOCKEDON25 to activate that offer. Go ahead, visit MyBookie today. That's MyBookie, and don't forget that promo code LOCKEDON25 to get the extra $25 after you deposit after 7 p.m. You play, you win, you get paid. So let's talk about the wide receiver group. Justin Hardy is a free agent, and the Falcons are going to have to, in my opinion, make a decision this offseason to keep either him or Mohamed Sanu. I think keeping both makes little to no sense. As I've said a number of times over the last 3 years, both guys sort of basically fill the same niche on the team. You don't need two of those guys. They're slot receivers. They're underneath sort of possession guys. They move the chains. They're good blockers, all that sort of thing. But I said this back when we signed Sanu back in 2016, and again, this is reason number 412, why I wasn't necessarily keen on the signing. But having both those guys on the roster, you're going to marginalize one. And we've seen over the last 3 years that the guy that has been marginalized is Justin Hardy. I feel like, not to rehash this old tired argument that I'm sure some of you are rolling your eyes at, but part of the reason why I felt like the team was overpaying for Sanu was because they already had a version of that on the roster. The Falcons have, over the last three seasons, paid Sanu over $20 million, while Hardy has made just a little bit more than $2 million. And while I certainly will have no problems conceding that Sanu is better than Hardy, I don't think he's so much better that it justifies paying 9 to 10 times as much money for him. You're basically paying, $10. If Sanu is getting paid $10 and Hardy's getting paid $1, if Hardy's only worth $1, I think Sanu is probably only worth like $2, in my opinion. That's how I sort of view it. But I think in all likelihood, the Falcons will still choose to retain Sanu because it's just the easier decision. You don't really have to do anything. Hardy's a free agent. You can let him walk and you don't have to do anything to keep Sanu. As you can probably guess, I'm not necessarily agreeable with that decision, but at the same time, I get it. The Falcons could save up to about $4.6 million, almost $5 million by cutting Sanu. And I personally think that's money that could be better served being spent elsewhere. I could spend 15 minutes breaking it down. I guess I'll just spend five. But I think most of you guys are far smart enough to figure out the sort of the economics of why I sort of think that. Sanu's cap hit next year is $7.4 million. He's going to be the number three. Especially a slot receiver, where I'm also, similar to running backs, I sort of think slot receivers are kind of a dime a dozen, and teams too many teams spend way too many resources on slot receivers, especially given the fact that both Jones and Ridley this season and Jones in previous years have been far more productive out of the slot than Sanu has been. And so, you know, one of the other things that I look at when you look at certain metrics like yards per route run, according to Pro Football Focus, there is some evidence that through the first half of this season that you're getting diminishing returns on Sanu from 2016 to 2017 and now in 2018. And I think it's likely that that trend is going to keep continuing into 2019. It's similar to the argument I made in the past with Michael Turner going into that 2012 season or 2012 offseason, which was that you had diminishing returns from Turner from 08 to 2011 and expecting that trend to change in year five, which would have been 2012 in Turner's case, was pretty foolish. And I thought then the best options were to either cut Turner outright or to get him on a restructured deal and lower his salary to mesh better with sort of those diminished abilities. Obviously, the Falcons chose to do neither of those things, and it resulted in Turner basically doing nothing outside of like one or two good games, including that Seahawk playoff game. Now, I sort of think Sanu's sort of in a similar boat, maybe not the exact same boat. And I should be clear, if Sanu has a better second half than I think the first half of the season, then that argument holds a lot less water than I just made. So we'll have to see. And so that's one of the reasons why I'm like, nothing is set in stone. But the bigger issue, I think, at the wide receiver position, beyond whether you decide to keep Hardy or Sanu, is that I think the Falcons are in a position where they kind of have to draft a wide receiver next year. I think, you know, preferably that happens in the middle rounds of the draft. But I feel like the Falcons have been in this situation before, and they had an aging trio of receivers, not wide receivers, but receivers previously in Roddy White and Harry Douglas and Tony Gonzalez and some young phenom in Julio Jones. And they did not get as many years from that aging group of wide receivers they probably had hoped. And because they had not really invested with draft picks in their wide receiver group, they were sort of left behind the eight ball, and that led to them drafting Hardy and signing Hankerson and signing Sanu and Gabriel and Robinson, and ultimately, you can argue, led to them drafting Ridley this past season to sort of make up, to capitalize on sort of the lack of investment that they had given in the draft at that position. And I remember writing back in 2014, which was that the Smith regime did a poor job of investing in their wide receiver group. And like I had shown then, that in the six previous drafts from 2009 to 2014, the Falcons had only drafted two wide receivers, Julio Jones and Kerry Meyer. And the league average during that same span was for the average NFL team to have drafted six wide receivers in that span. And, you know, you look at now and you see that the Falcons have drafted four wide receivers in the last four drafts, which seems like they're at least drafting on average, but you do have to consider that two of those wide receivers were primarily special teams guys in Russell Gage and Devin Fuller and offered minimal abilities and upside on offense. And so instead, you really have two wide receivers drafted in 4 years. And while Dan Quinn has made strides, you know, and this is an argument I will probably make tomorrow with the defensive line, Dan Quinn has made strides beyond what the Mike Smith regime has done, but it doesn't necessarily mean that he has made enough strides in some of these areas, and particularly with drafting D linemen, and particularly with drafting wide receivers, or at least today with wide receivers. We'll discuss the D line issue tomorrow. But so I feel like the Falcons kind of need to draft a wide receiver. And I've said this a number of times over the last 6 months, but I don't think you can be as certain that Julio Jones is going to play more than two more seasons in Atlanta as probably some people are. I think with Ridley now under the fold, you feel reasonably confident you have your future number one wide receiver in the fold when Julio does decide to hang it up, whether it's 3 years from now or 6 years from now. You know, Sanu is going to be 30 next year. And, you know, basically you wasted the last 3 years of Hardy's development. And while Marvin Hall is a solid role player, I don't think you can necessarily count on him to be more than, say, a Aljack Robinson type of fourth wide receiver. So I do think the Falcons are in a position where sooner than I think some people might think or expect, the Falcons are going to need another number two to sort of team with Ridley and be his tag team partner. And unlike the running back position, I do think you kind of have to draft a wide receiver at least 1 year earlier than you need them. And so that's one of the reasons why you kind of need to keep going back to that wheelhouse and drafting guys there. And I think right now is the right time for the Falcons to do that. You know, age catches up to these wide receivers a lot quicker than I think people realize, particularly when they get on the wrong side of 30. We saw this with Douglas and Roddy. And I think, you know, that may again happen now with Sanu and Julio. And you don't want to be in a situation like we were with Douglas and Roddy, where you're counting on a guy like Lennon Hankerson to sort of basically be your number two. So I hope the Falcons have learned from that mistake and get a young guy in here that can replace Hardy and or Sanu in 2019, that can grow by the time we get to 2021, can sort of be that sort of number two guy opposite Ridley in whatever form, fashion. So drafting a Cooper Kupp, a Deshaun Hamilton, a Tre'Quan Smith type of player this year in the middle rounds, rounds 3 through 5, to me makes a ton of sense. I think besides the offensive line, that is the team's biggest offensive need. Now, we're going to talk about the offensive line in just a moment, but I do want to let you guys know that you want to stay locked on your fantasy football seasons by checking out two Locked On Fantasy Football podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network. The first one is Locked On Fantasy Football 24/7, which helps you get all the news and injury updates that you need to help win your games each and every weekend. And of course, you can check out Locked On Fantasy Football with longtime host Vinny Iyer, who has a new fantasy expert every single day to help you guys win your league. Check out them both wherever you get your Locked On podcast, your fantasy team every day. So let's talk about the offensive line. And obviously, that's the biggest problem area of this roster. I don't necessarily know the Falcons have to totally revamp this group, but I certainly think they need to invest significant, particularly draft capital, in this group. Part of the reason I've come to that conclusion is I don't think this free agent crop of offensive linemen as it sits today is particularly great. I think, you know, there's a particular guard, there's a handful of tackles that are decent. I think there's a bunch of Brandon Fusco type of guards, which isn't necessarily going to really move the needle at this point. The problem is the Falcons have too many guys on the wrong side of 30. Schrader, Garland, Mack, Levitre, Fusco are all on the wrong side of 30. And right now, Jake Matthews is the only guy under 30 that you can sort of really pencil in as a starter. Maybe Schweitzer, maybe Ghana with another year's development. But there's really nobody else under 30 that you can sit there and be like, yeah, that guy's going to start for us at some point. Obviously, the biggest issue is the right tackle position, and you have to answer the questions about what you do with Ryan Schrader. I think you have three options. Option one is you cut Ryan Schrader, you sign a free agent. Again, I don't love the free agent crop. You know, the guys that sort of are at the top of my list, or look at the top of the list from scanning next year's free agents, are Trent Brown, Juwan James. You know, the issue is Brown may want left tackle money now that he's playing left tackle for the Patriots. And James has struggled to stay healthy over the years, so he's not necessarily a reliable option either. Option two is to cut Schrader and get your guy in a draft. I think the problem with that is that if you want a day one starter, and if you cut Schrader, that's exactly what you want. And I said this to Charles McDonald on an episode last week. I think you're really only realistically going to find that guy in the first round, and typically only in the top 20 picks. So basically, if you're not drafting a Mike McGlinchey, a Taylor Decker, a Ryan Ramczyk, you know, there's a chance that you can land a Rob Havenstein type of player that can come in and start for you in round two or later. But those guys are fairly rare. So if you cut Schrader and don't add a veteran, I think you're sort of forcing your hand that, you know, the direction that you go in first round is going to be an offensive tackle. And you better hope that there's a guy good enough for you to pick wherever the Falcons wind up picking, which at this point in time, I'm assuming is going to be at some point in the 15 to 20 range. Option three is to keep Schrader and draft his replacement at some point, whether it's in the first round, second, or third round. And that option at least gives you some flexibility to what you can do in the first round. And you're not necessarily penalized for waiting until round two or round three to take a more developmental option, which typically is the case, due to the premium on offensive tackles. And you can sort of keep Schrader for a year and then have whoever you draft sort of slide in 2020 to replace him. Which option the Falcons choose to go with, I think largely depends on how Schrader finishes the season. The better he finishes, you know, option three becomes, I think, the more likely option. And we'll have to sort of see if we at some point see Gano. I don't think that's going to be the case. I doubt we will. Right now, I again would lean towards option 3/C or whatever you want to call it, which is to keep Schrader and draft his heir apparent in round 2 or so. I think moving on to the guard position, I think the good thing about the guard is there isn't the same premium on zone, particularly zone blocking guards, as there is on man blocking guards and especially offensive tackles. So you can realistically wait into the draft in round 3 or 4 and still get a guy that could presumably be a day one starter. More than likely you'll draft a guy and he'll compete for a job rather than come in right away and hit the ground running. But, you know, there is at least a history of, you know, third and fourth round guys coming in right away and starting and performing at a reasonably competent, I should say, not high level. There also is the option that I'm sure some people will suggest is that if you get the right player, you could draft a tackle in round 1 that could come in right away and play guard or vice versa. Position switches aren't necessarily something that I'm super, super keen on. I think like whatever you bring the guy into play, you should play him at that spot and keep him at that spot. But, you know, that is an option and depending on which player, you know, there may be a guy that you feel like, oh, that guy can do that, as opposed to, you know, just in generally where you would, I would generally shy away from that sort of strategy. Looking at the center position, you know, one of the positives is, you know, if the Falcons choose to draft a developmental guy, one of the positives is that the premium at center, other than maybe fullback, is probably the lowest of any position on an offense. And so you can realistically wait until round 5 or later and still get a pretty good center relative to his draft class and still get one of the 3 or 4 best centers in that draft class by waiting till round 5 or 6 or something like that. So I think there is a scenario where the Falcons do use a 2nd, a 4th, and a 6th round pick on a tackle, guard, and center or some combination of, you know, an early, a mid, and a late round pick on offensive linemen. And that makes a lot of sense to me because you have 3 guys hitting free agency in Sambrelo, Lavitre, and Garland, and presumably those 3 draft picks could wind up replacing all 3 of those guys. Garland is the only one of those 3 guys that I think is you realistically discuss keeping him beyond this season, and a lot of that will depend on how well he plays over the next 9 weeks. That may be seem to some of you to be a little bit more draft capital than you would prefer to use on the offensive line. But as I said at the top, I do think getting younger at that offensive line group makes a ton of sense. And, you know, with the defensive line, I think you do need to invest some draft capital there. But I do think given that it's a deeper free agent group you're not as feeling the need to get younger at that defensive line as you do on the offensive line, that you can afford to maybe invest a little bit more in free agency in the defensive line rather than in the draft. But we'll talk about those 2 things or those 2 areas where the Falcons can address the defensive line as well as the rest of the defense on tomorrow's episode. I appreciate you guys for tuning in today. And if you have any comments or suggestions or disagreements, I'm sure some of you do, provide your feedback to me on Twitter. I'm at FalcFans. Of course, the show's Twitter handle is Locked On Falcons. Since it is podcast related, you just might as well send it over to that handle. You can also check me out on Facebook at Locked On Falcons. The email address is LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. And of course, you can leave a comment at FalcFans.com where the podcast is posted daily. So, until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.